Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. And we are going to begin our program today by taking a look at a spirited history of Milwaukee brew and booze. That's the title of a book written by Martin Hintz. He's the author of more than 100 books, many on Wisconsin topics. He worked at the Milwaukee Sentinel as an editor and reporter and founded the Irish American Post, which started as a newspaper and became a magazine. So it's great to have him with us. He's with our in our studios in Milwaukee. Martin, are you there?
We're all set. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. Great to have you along today.
Well, and thank you.
I really enjoyed reading through your book. It's a lot of fun. And maybe to begin, you could tell us or talk about the culture of brewing and distilling in Wisconsin, how it took root, and why was Milwaukee the epicenter, so to speak.
Well, more taps here, I guess.
Yeah.
It was immigrants that really got everything going. Of course, Wisconsin is an immigrant state, and the first people who were growing hops here in the state in the 1840s were Welsh, and they actually had the first brewery here in the mid-1840s. And then followed by the Welsh, the Germans started arriving. And, of course, we all know the good heritage of German beer and brews. And that took root in the city because the ships would come across the lake, and from Milwaukee, people would go inland. So it was a great business hub, of course. And with the rich agricultural heritage we had here in the state, you could get the product, the hops and the barleys and all the other grains that go into the beer. And, of course, the Germans had that great heritage that they brought with them. So by 1860 or so, there were some 400 breweries in the state of Wisconsin, and 40 were located here in Milwaukee. And a lot of them were quite small, of course, in the basement of a saloon or something like that. But then they, of course, grew and grew and grew. And now we're coming all the way back. It goes full circle because we have marvelous microbreweries here in the city, just like in Madison and throughout the state here. So,
That's big grand comeback for those craft beers and microbeers.
Oh, lip smacking good. Yes.
Yeah, lip smacking good is right. Well, you know, I think about the families, and I really enjoyed the little histories you had on Schlitz and Miller and Pabst, Blatz a little bit. Talk about some of those families. They're really interesting histories there. Schlitz, I think Joe Schlitz wasn't – actually, it was a different brewery before he took it over, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, a lot of them started, as I mentioned, real small, like in somebody's tavern. And the tavern keeper got bigger and bigger and bigger, and eventually they need to have a business manager or somebody who had a little more acumen in marketing. And so therefore they'd bring in someone with a little bit more experience and background, and that's how a lot of these major breweries got kicked off. But one good twist is that a lot of these fellows were quite dashing, bold, and handsome. And, of course, with a twinkle in their eye, they could marry the boss's daughter or the former boss's widow.
Yeah, that happened.
more than once.
Pretty short order, actually, after the death.
Yeah, really. And they didn't waste any time in those days. And, by the time the foam was off the head of the beer, the wedding bells were pealing, and off they'd go. And it was just kind of neat. And then, of course, these families intermarried, and you've got so many marvelous stories about, the social scene here in the city that was just totally marvelous. They had their big, their palatial mansions on Milwaukee's Lake Drive overlooking Lake Michigan, or up on Grand Avenue, which is now Wisconsin Avenue, the historic Pabst Mansion.
Oh, beautiful.
Where, Captain Frederick Pabst lived. And it was just a marvelous social scene here. And they were able to really put their stamp on the city and married into the other families as well, the tanneries, the industrialists, blue bloods, or beer bloods, I guess would be a good way of phrasing it.
And you do have some nice pictures in there, not only of the bars, but of some of those buildings, some of those homes and such. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
Amount of money made there.
Oh, there sure was. And it was so neat to work with the families like Nancy Gettleman, whose grandfather started the Gettleman Brewery, and Lined Eline of the Eline Schlitz family, mm-hmm. and the Miller Coors, and everybody was so helpful. And, of course, we can't claim that this is the definitive history of Milwaukee Brews and Booze. But it did take a lot of gallons of research, I would have to say.
Well, I'm going to give our listeners a chance to join in. You may have a question or comment, and if you do, I hope you'll share it with us. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. By the way, on the Facebook page, A Spirited History of Milwaukee Brews and Booze, we've got a link to the site for the book, and so you can just click on that and go right to it. And Kathleen in Green Bay is up with a comment or question. Hi, Kathleen.
Hello. I definitely, as soon as I'm done, I'm going to hang up and buy your book. My father worked for Miller High Life for 35 years. We used to go to dinner at Harry John's house, who was the son who inherited Miller High Life. And before my mother married my father, she worked for the Blatz family, and I believe they had a huge home in Pewaukee Lake. But the fond memories I have is when my dad, when it was face-to-face, he would go tavern to tavern to sell the beer, take the orders, set up the displays, and put up their advertising. And if I had kept the neon signs and some of the things I could be a rich woman on eBay.
Probably could be the collectors, yeah.
Oh, yeah. There, some of the great signs. There was some great signage, wasn't there?
Well, and Miller High Life also was a sponsor. I'm still sad that the Braves left Milwaukee. That's how long I hold a grudge. But Miller High Life was a sponsor of the Milwaukee Braves.
Yeah.
And so my father was able to work with Henry Aaron for promotional things. And he did us a great service when the streetcars were going to be leaving Milwaukee. He took us on the streetcar, and we went past Miller High Life, and it was the last run that they had of the streetcars. So you just made me well up with so many fond memories of that. And I'll tell you, when he was retired, he went to selling beer over the phone, distributorship in the executive offices. You know, they would ship it by rail then after they went away from the door-to-door sales. And he would walk into our homes. We had a total of five children. And he'd open that refrigerator, and if we did not have Miller products in our refrigerator, he would give us uniforms and say, "That's my pension there. You don't have my pension in your refrigerator."
Well, that's great. There's so many good memories. I think just about everybody in Wisconsin has some tie or affiliation to a tavern keeper or a brewer or in sales and whatnot. And it's part of the wonders of this state, not just cheese, but cheese and beer.
Absolutely. Kathleen, great stories. Thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate it very much. Oh, you can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. She mentioned going around to the various taverns, and I know you point out in your book the number of taverns in Milwaukee and the surrounding little towns is formidable.
Formidable. To say the least. Yeah, either way, it's just really amazing. And it was funny, like a lot of the big businesses in downtown Milwaukee at one time, they'd send out a kid to get beer at the local pub across the street or something. Even Northwestern Mutual, they'd have some kid bringing pails of beer up to the managers, and they would have their sip and whatever. And so that heritage was really, that was a good way to get into the business. These kids would scamper around and pick up tips and service the bankers or the insurance brokers, everybody who supposedly were the, you know, the swells. They enjoyed their beer just like, you know, Joe Sixpack downtown. And so we also had the distilling heritage too.
Yeah, you bring that out in your book as well.
And like Milwaukee's Third Ward had quite a few distillation plants, and like they all grew into major corporations later until, of course, sometimes Prohibition nailed them. But
Lakefront, like Sprecher, yeah. Lakefront at least.
Yeah, and Meadow Springs became National, and then National became Red Star Yeast, and Red Star Yeast became Sensient Technologies and Worldwide. And so from humble beginnings, from a small pour to a refrigerated car, I guess you could say, which is kind of neat.
Absolutely. We have Jack in Herbster who has a comment or question. Hi, Jack. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hey, I just enjoy your show here because I am really into these microbrews here, but I was very disappointed to see that our new government has in Wisconsin has actually put the micro breweries at a disadvantage now. It makes it harder for them to get started, and it seems like the wrong direction to go because, you know, they're even looking at growing hops now because of all the local breweries. Mm-hmm. So it seems like heading in the wrong direction and favoring big business, which is no surprise for the Republican Party. But to put our own homegrown beers at a disadvantage seems like an insult to me.
Well, it's kind of a shame, but I think over the years this will kind of even out a little bit because the whole thing is jobs and job creation, and the microbreweries do just as good a job as anybody else in employment. And, you know, everybody, the wait staff, the breweries, all that. So it'll all come together, I think.
Yeah, I think there are already some bills being put together, and I don't want to say to sort of remedy the issue. Or try to remedy it at least. So there's some hope, Jack. There's some hope for those craft brewers. Bill in Madison, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I thought it was really ironic when I moved here in 1993 from the West Coast. I moved here from Seattle. The thing that shocked me coming to Wisconsin was I thought, oh, my God, am I going to be able to survive here? Because I could not find a decent glass of beer.
What?
It was all mass market, watery swill, like you usually find, you know, in the cans, in the convenience stores. And, you know, now, of course, it's changed. There's lots of craft microbreweries. But when I was in Seattle, microbreweries were starting in the late 70s there. For example, there's an Irish pub to this day there called Murphy's. You could go there in the 80s and find 50 taps, literally 50 taps of local microbrews.
Yeah. Part of the reason, I think, for that, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, Martin, is the fact that out west in that part of the country, that's where the hops production migrated to. And it's coming back here in Wisconsin, but having access to local hops probably helped Seattle and those areas, get going on the craft beers.
Yeah, sometimes the Midwest, I hate to say it, we're a little... It takes a bit to catch up. And now that we have caught up, we've got Sprecher Brewing here in town. We've got Lakefront. We've got St. Francis. We have Horny Goat. We've got many, many others. And, of course, in Madison area, you've got Great Dane, and you've got Capital. You've got so many other great all over the state now. So I think we're stampeding ahead.
Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with a question or comment at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Judith just put up three martini recipes on our Facebook as a note. I think at least one of them was from your book. So actually, all three of them are from your book. Hopefully, you're not going to sue us for
not
plagiarizing
at all,
right out of your book here.
Well, those were offered by Ray Horst, the Great Lakes Distillery, which is the first distillery since Prohibition here in Milwaukee. And Guy Ray Horst has a marvelous line of vodka, gin, rum, and absinthe and all that. And so he was gracious enough to allow us to use some of his martini recipes. And I'm looking at the Allen Bradley clock out the window here from the studio, and I'm thinking that only 6 hours to go or so until it's cocktail time. So martinis are always grand fun.
Oh, and we'll take some more calls here in just a second, but I want to remind everybody, you are listening to Martin Heintz, who is author of the book A Spirited History of Milwaukee Brew and Booze. Great to have him along. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at Milwaukee breweries and distilleries with our guest today, Martin Heintz, the author of A Spirited History of Milwaukee Brew and Booze. Great to have him along, and thank you so much for listening in. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. And Phyllis in Greenwood, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Phyllis. Thank you for calling. Well, wait a second. Hold on, Phyllis. Let me get your there we go. Go ahead.
I'm enjoying your program so much because my father owned a saloon from about 1945 to almost 1960 in a small town of 1,000 population, maybe 1,100. We had 5 taverns, all of whom made a living selling beer and other alcoholic products. But the fun of it was when the beer men came, because our job as kids was we had to go to the basement and sort the bottles into the appropriate cases, and the bottles went back, you know, good old-fashioned sure. recycling. And the beer men tended to be the same people all the time. You know, the people made their living delivering beer. And, of course, we got to know them really well as kids and like them. You know, they'd give us a quarter now and again for sorting the bottles. And I remember the local farmers coming into town to pick up feed and for their cows, and then they'd stop for a couple beers on the way home. Everybody had their favorite, and sometimes they would even, you know, argue whether Blatz was better than Schlitz or that kind of thing. And the other thing about it is that I remember that beer really did taste like beer. And I kind of go along with the guy who talked about the swill, that now that you get to it, it just doesn't have the bite that the old beers used to have.
Yeah.
So I personally miss the old beers. But I'm taking advantage of the microbreweries as well. So
that's the spirit, as we say.
Oh, yeah, that's the spirit. And some of the beers, you know, to some of the great beers, breweries from Milwaukee, Pabst is probably a very good example of a beer that kind of seemed to kind of go out of favor, and now it's sort of an in beer again, Martin?
Yeah, they're coming back around because they've tinkered with the formulas, and I think they're realizing that people want to have a little bit of personality to their beer rather than kind of a long, generic kind of a taste to them. But can I just throw something in here about taverns, Larry?
Yeah, since we're kind please of do. About taverns? Please do.
Yeah, a good friend of mine, Harold Gower, was a former member of the Milwaukee Press Club, which, by the way, is the oldest press club in the country. And Harold really loved his taverns from the 30s and 40s. And he's got this, he quoted, I have a quote in the book from it, and he describes the taverns with segues from the other young lady who just spoke. For some good souls, the tavern was a confessional. For the depressed, it was a pool in which sorrow was drowned. And for boasters, appreciative listeners were always there. The tavern served all the purposes of the classic Greek marketplace, the desert oasis, and the baths of ancient Rome. So there you have your tavern. And Milwaukee once had 2,440 taverns in the early 20th century, and that's about one tavern for about every 130 persons in the city at that time. So,
wow. What's the number now?
Oh, it's not quite as much. So,
but still a very significant number. And, you know, the personalities of the bars are what's always interesting to me. I did some of my PhD research. Involved communities, and mm-hmm. And what people were thinking about in communities. That's the very basic description I'm going to give you. But what I would do would be to go when I went into a town to check things out. The first place I go to would be to a couple of local taverns. Because there you always, and it was amazing how accurate oftentimes the sentiment from the taverns was about the town as a whole.
Oh, you sure got all the good stories. I mean, like here in Milwaukee, you had, you know, Frank and Sally's and Shorty's Doghouse and Mr. Joe's and all these great places. And now somebody mentioned Murphy's Tavern. And, of course, now we've got a lot of good Irish bars here in the city, just like they do throughout, all of Wisconsin. And some great stories there as well.
And they have they all have their own little personality, I think.
Yeah, I had a relative came and visited one time when I lived over on Milwaukee's east side, and he was marveling at, he stood in the middle of an intersection and looked all four directions, and each corner had a tavern, and there was another one in the middle of every block, as far as he could see. You know, these Flatlanders don't quite understand that, but it was shock and awe. And everybody had their own clientele, and it was just good fun.
We were in a bar called the Bomb Shelter in Milwaukee not too long ago. And speaking of personalities, I don't know if you've ever been in that bar, Martin, but downtown, not far from our Milwaukee studios, actually. And they have something like, I think it's 400 or 500 types of beer. And it's a small place, relatively small, I think. And I was sitting at a table watching the bartender kind of disappear. And then I realized that they did not have the room in the bar area for all of the types of beer. So if someone ordered a beer that they didn't have upstairs, they had a trap door behind the bar, and the bartender would open the trap door and go downstairs and get that beer and bring it back up.
The best way to do it. There's a place in Shorewood now called the Three Lions, and it's right next to one of the new little micro breweries. So whenever they start to need another case, they just walk next door, and it was kind of funny. So. And then there was another good bar called Wolski's, and it's one of the oldest in the city. In 1908, that got going in the same family, and I think that's got earns a medal of some kind to do that. And that's one of the famous bars in Milwaukee, as you mentioned. And then the Newsroom Pub is another one. And you can just go down a line, you know, Hegarty's and the Glockamora and all these other ones are just grand fun.
You see, I think Wolski's, you see, they have T-shirts and bumper stickers that say, "I closed Wolski's," or something like that.
Yeah, that's a famous one. And all the, you know, different wars throughout the years, guys would put them on their tanks or the bombers, and it'd be all over the world. And you had somebody from home remembering you.
Bud in La Crosse, going to you now. Hi, Bud. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I seem to think that at times La Crosse was the West Coast Wisconsin microcosm of Milwaukee. We had 5 breweries going here at one time, just years ago, however. And I just wanted to say that I worked for my father for a while, who ran a liquor store, and we sold beer to our friends across the river in Winona, Minnesota.
Well, hands across the sea almost. Right? That's good.
Well, it was a mutual endeavor because we carried booms and 15 or 16 brands from Minnesota. Hams was a big seller, of course, in those days. Our La Crosse brewery at that time, Heilemann's, was one of the top 5 or 6 in the United States. You guys probably all remember that.
Oh, yes, sure.
And they were number one in Chicago. And Blatt's was number one in Wisconsin at that time and throughout the state. But out of our store in volume, Fauerbach, right out of your studio, yeah. Madison was our big seller. And I've always been interested in the beer game, and I'm glad to see that it's healthy and it's coming back alive in the way that it originally started.
Good comments. Martin?
It's good for entrepreneurship. we've got it here.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bud, for calling. I appreciate that very much. Rosemary in Eau Claire has a comment, I think. Hi, Rosemary.
Hello. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Now, this is an absolute true story. My grandfather, Adelard Napoleon Duval, from Quebec, who moved to the Wisconsin area, and was a lumberjack. And during Prohibition, my grandfather made moonshine.
Mm-hmm.
And the moonshine, or the federal agents, found out about it, and they went chasing him through the woods and, of course, caught him and took him to Milwaukee. And when he got into Milwaukee, because they knew how good his moonshine was, the federal agents had him set up a still in the basement of the federal agency. And he made moonshine for all of the federal agents in Milwaukee. And that is so true. It is such a true, true story.
Oh, that's
funny. I had to tell you.
That's a great story, Rosemary. Did you come on stories like that? And I know you have a chapter devoted to Prohibition, but you probably heard some good stories yourself, Martin.
Oh, for real, yeah. And, you know, the temperance movement is not from the 1920s. It started way back in the 1840s. And I guess wherever there was a beer being poured, there might have been somebody who didn't want to have somebody drink it, which is a shame. And in fact, Milwaukee's first St. Patrick's Day parade in 1843 was a temperance parade. And it was led by a German priest, and he was trying to get the Irish immigrants to respectable sobriety. And thank heavens we've kind of tempered that off a little bit now. And this grand, you know, we've come full circle. But the temperance movement has really been around for a long time, just as the beer has been. And of course, a lot of the agents, as was just the last caller mentioned, they were kind of on the take, which is too bad because. You know, you can moralize just so much, and then people fall into the trap of trying to, you know, make a buck here and there, and they make a bad choice. So,
thinking back on, I'm thinking of an old dear friend who's passed away now, Claren Burnett, who was a professor here at the University of Wisconsin from Oklahoma during Prohibition time. He was just a little kid, and I think his dad ran the Dipsy Doodle Tavern. And they had a railroad track that ran behind the place, and his dad went out and dug a hole between the two of the ties and sunk a box down in there, and they'd put their illegal booze in that box, and then that's where they stored it, and then they'd bring in one bottle at a time.
Well, that's funny. Yeah, just when they needed it.
When they needed it, because they didn't want to lose it if the police came.
But we did redeem ourselves, Wisconsin did, because John Blaine, our 24th governor, became a senator. And he was the one who introduced the original resolution to Congress proposing the 21st Amendment that repealed the 18th. So Wisconsin stepped up and saved the day for the beer and distilling industry, and that was back in the 1932. So we came full circle, and Wisconsin jumped on the bandwagon, as we say, and here we are today. So,
Jim and Horicon, excuse me, Jim. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, you guys. my son got married to a Japanese woman in early July, and her father was reluctant to come. You know, to make the long flight from Japan over here to Wisconsin. But when he found out that we had all these delicious beers over here, he bought his ticket. So he was on the way, and he really enjoyed it. We got him around to taste a lot of different ones. And we got our beer for the reception from a brewery in Arena, you probably know it, and it was quite good. We enjoyed it.
And he did, too.
He did, too.
That's a good
story. Getting back to Hands Across the Sea, right? That's the best way to do it.
Thank you so much for calling. That's a great story. You know, Milwaukee is, it's no longer, I don't think, the big industrial beer city it once was. You talk about how the landscape's changed in the last 50 or so years and where it stands today.
Right. Like anything, conglomeration and consolidation and, labels are bought out. And like Miller now owns so many different labels and recipes from the old days that you know, you don't know actually sometimes who's brewing what at any particular time, because it, the landscape is ever changing, and that's why these micro breweries are you know, doing so well, because it's your neighborhood beer. You can walk down the street and find something really, really good. So, but like all throughout the country and throughout the world, the globalization is the key, you know, to the big business, and but we still can find something small and intimate and really good, a cozy snug somewhere with a good tap.
Absolutely. Lois in Madison up next. Hi, Lois. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling this morning in regards to a Wisconsin-born brewmeister who has moved out to Portland, Oregon, but grew up in Shawano, and her business out there is called Saravesa Bottle Shop and Pasty Tavern. And she features a lot of Green Bay Packer paraphernalia and Badger things as well, and was featured recently in a publication called The Love of Beer, where they did a documentary celebrating women in the Pacific Northwest beer industry. So anyway, her business is called Saravesa, and it's saravesa.com. But I thought that was kind of fun. She grew up in Shawano over on the east edge of the state and visited a lot of bars and taverns to help develop her business plan and its unique niche out there in Portland.
Good research.
Yeah. Well, thank you for an interesting show.
Thanks very much calling. That's great. And, you know, that's good to hear. You for some reason, at least among my own sphere of knowledge here, we don't have very many women who are brewmasters, for example.
Well, they're coming around. And, I mean, women were executives even way, way back.
Some yes,
you mentioned
they
the
were.
The brew-bearing families like... you know, Captain Pabst's sister-in-law, Lisette, was the brewery's vice president when her husband died, and she took an active role in kind of helping give some of the direction to that company way back in the early 1900s. And there were a couple of other people when widows, you know, when their husbands died, they'd step up and do the brewing themselves, and those, especially the smaller taverns that did their own brewing. The widow would do it, and so it was kind of neat. So throughout history, not a lot, of course, but they're coming along.
Carl in Madison, let's turn to you next. Hi, Carl.
Howdy. I'm going to be 69 at least for another 2 weeks, and I have one relative in particular who is reputed to be involved in the
Prohibition?
Yes, Prohibition. Thank you very much. Who was involved in some scandalous activities. But my favorite great uncle, he was. My question is the following. Booze is, condensed, and so it's more easily transported than beer. But what I'm wondering about is were there actually, during Prohibition, was there beer available?
Because mean legally available?
No, of course not. What I'm talking about is it's much more bulky to transport, and I'm, it seems like if you're going to go into an illegal activity, you'd be producing booze rather than beer. But then again,
yeah.
Well, a lot of people could do it on their own. It's not that home brewing has been around for a long time. So some of the more rural areas would. If you had the agricultural product to go into it, you could make beer for at least for your family, for yourselves, and if not in volume. It was around, and they could smuggle it down from Canada and whatnot. But spirits were the big thing in Prohibition, as far
thank
as
you.
You're right.
Yep. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have some more callers online here. Don in Madison, let's go to you. Hi, Don. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'd like to bring to mind W.C. Fields, who, when he heard a man who drowned in a vat of whiskey, pondered a little bit and then said, "Oh, death, where is thy sting?" You've heard of that one, haven't you?
Now, Fields was quite a character, wasn't he?
he had many funny sayings, didn't he? And oftentimes, I think some of the most hilarious. Routines that he did revolved around liquor and booze and when he was bartending Some great stories, Martin.
Yeah, and Captain Pabst had a funny comment, too, and one of his aphorisms was, no man should drink too much beer, even if it was good beer, and that 40 or 50 glasses a day ought to be the limit for anybody. So, anyhow, and Pabst was more of a wine drinker, and but it was so funny that he'd be head of a major brewery. And one person came to his house. He threw these lavish dinner parties at his mansion in Milwaukee, and some fellow wag said, I'll take a Schlitz, thinking he'd fool the captain, but the captain had beer from every other of his competitors, so he brought out the Schlitz at the time and kind of put the fellow in his place, and that was he was quite a humorist himself in a Germanic sort of a way.
Well, and there's so much more that we can talk about here. There were so many impressive things. Very impressive remnants of the heyday of Milwaukee's beer and spirits industry do dot the urban landscape there. And we talked a bit about that. But what should people make a point to see?
Well, of course, there are grand tours still at Miller and Lakeshore Brewery and at Sprecher Brewery. So you can capture a bit of the heritage that way and have a sample, naturally.
Sure.
And that's part of the fun and of visiting and being a tourist in your own home state is to come and try that. And buy local product. You know, it doesn't travel as far and tastes just as good as anything else, if not better. And that's another way to help our local folks keep in business, too. So,
and I did want to mention that right at the end of your book, and we put up the martini recipes, but you also have Milwaukee's best beer and spirit recipes. And Carbonade a la Flamand is one of my favorites. As a matter of fact, and I've made that many times, beef and onion braised in beer.
Ooh, you're making me hungry.
It is so good. It is so good.
Yeah, we were lucky to get the various chefs in the city to contribute to that little section. It's a chapter called Beer Chasers, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Pichong of Riverside and Adam Siegel of Bartolotta Restaurant Group and Adam Siegel. And they had some really good things to toss in there. So that was a nice little addition, I think.
Oh, it was a great addition to the book. Yeah, and so people can get the book pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, your local bookstore is always
sure.
a good spot. Here in Milwaukee, it would be Next Chapter or Boswell's and the bigger chain stores, of course. And it's around the state as well in the bookshops. And you can order it, of course, on Amazon and directly from the publisher, which is The History Press. Mm-hmm. And just type in thehistorypress.com and they'll have a little shopping cart there for you. So you say buy a case.
Buy it by the case. Okay.
Buy it by the case. Good for holiday giving.
Oh, Martin, thank you so much. Great pleasure.
Great fun. Make mine a double.
Martin.
How's that?
that sounds great. Martin Hintz is the author of a lot of books. He's written over 100 books, including the one we talked about today, a fun book. It's called A Spirited History of Milwaukee, Brews and Booze. And you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show if you want a link. You can get a link right to it and see a little bit more about what went on in the days and actually what's going on today, because he gets into that as well with the brew pubs and the microbreweries and so forth that's going on. Well, we're going to turn our attention to, we're going to actually stay a little bit in Milwaukee, to be perfectly honest, but Martin was mentioning history, and we have a historian coming up next. Erica Janik has a great story to tell about quack medicine in Wisconsin history. You know where the term quack came from? How we use that term? We'll tell you in just a minute here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.